It's November the 20th. Let's read the Bible. Friends, welcome back to this year-long journey from Genesis to Revelation in just 1 year. Well, yesterday we started our journey through Daniel, and we're calling this little four-day journey Courageous Faith in Dangerous Times. You remember, I told you yesterday, the book of Daniel covers a period from about 605 BC to about 535 BC. That's about 70 years. Daniel was, we're going to say he was 15 years old, could have been 20 years old, but I don't think much older than that. He's a young man when the book opens. He's a very old man when the book ends. If he was 15 when the book starts, he's 85 at least when the book ends. If he was 20, he's 90 years old when the book ends. There's one verse in the book of Daniel that takes place in Jerusalem. Everything else takes place in Babylon, the heart of heathen darkness. This book answers the question, how can I live for God in a pagan world? And I told you that's sort of the applicational question. How do we live for God in a world of spiritual darkness when the pagans are in charge of everything? How do we live for God? There's another question in the book, and it's a theological question. How can we trust a God who has been defeated? And the proof that the God of the Bible had been defeated was that Nebuchadnezzar's army had come in. They conquered Jerusalem 605 BC. They had looted the temple of its gold and silver and other objects of worship, taken them back from Jerusalem all the way back to Babylon, hundreds of miles away, and put those objects of worship in the temple of their own heathen pagan god. Because in that day, again, when you conquer another nation, you don't just beat them down. You go into their temple and you loot their temple and bring their stuff back to the temple of your god. Why? Because your god's bigger and better and stronger than their god. Your god won, their god lost. Okay. The God of the Bible apparently is lost as the book of Daniel begins. The question of the book is, how can we trust God who has been defeated? Well, the answer is pretty simple. If he's really been defeated, you really can't trust him, and you shouldn't. But we're going to see. There's another answer forthcoming as we get to the end of this book. And one other thing, then we'll jump right in. Today, chapters 4, 5, and 6. My outline of the book is based on the languages in the book. Hebrew, Aramaic, Hebrew. Hebrew, of course, the language of the Jewish people. Aramaic, a related language that was like a trade language that was the commercial trade language among many different nations in the ancient world. And then Hebrew again. So the personal history of Daniel, chapter 1, in Hebrew. The prophetic history of the Gentiles, chapters 2 through 7, Aramaic. And the prophetic history of Israel, chapters 8 through 12, that, again, is in Hebrew. So, I love chapter 2, verse 28 is a theme verse for the book. There is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. So now, today, Daniel 4, 5, and 6, if there had been the internet back then, 2,500 years ago, if there had been, this would have been an ancient blog entry. This is Nebuchadnezzar's story told in his own words. Chapter 4, the king who went crazy. Daniel 4, King Nebuchadnezzar, to those of every people, nation, and language, to those who live on the whole earth, may your prosperity increase. I am pleased to tell you about the miracles and wonders the Most High God has done for me. How great are his miracles, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at ease in my house and flourishing in my palace. I had a dream, and it frightened me. While in my bed, the images and visions in my mind alarmed me. So I issued a decree to bring all the wise men of Babylon to me in order that they might make the dream's interpretation known to me. When the magicians, mediums, Chaldeans, and diviners came in, I told them the dream, but they could not make its interpretation known to me. Finally, Daniel, named Belteshazzar after the name of my God, and a spirit of the holy gods is in him came before me. I told him the dream, Belteshazzar, head of the magicians, because I know that you have the spirit of the holy gods and that no mystery puzzles you. Explain to me the visions of my dream that I saw and its interpretation. In the visions of my mind, as I was lying in bed, I saw this. There was a tree in the middle of the earth, and it was very tall. The tree grew large and strong. Its top reached to the sky, and it was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful. Its fruit was abundant, and on it was food for all. Wild animals found shelter under it. The birds of the sky lived in its branches, and every creature was fed from it. As I was lying in my bed, I also saw in the visions of my mind a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He called out loudly, "Cut down the tree and chop off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the animals flee from under it and birds from its branches, but leave the stump with its roots in the ground and with a band of iron and bronze around it in the tender grass of the field. Let him." And I just pause here in my reading to say, see, the image changes. There's a tree, beautiful tree. It's been chopped down. There's a band of iron and bronze around it. And just like that, it changes from the image of a tree to something else. Let him. Let him. I'm reading in verse 15. Let him be drenched with dew from the sky and share the plants of the earth with the animals. Let his mind be changed from that of a human, and let him be given the mind of an animal for 7 periods of time. This word is by the decree of the watchers, and the decision is by the command from the holy ones. This is so that the living will know that the Most High is ruler over human kingdoms. He gives them to anyone he wants and sets the lowliest of people over them. This is the dream that I, King Nebuchadnezzar, had. Now, Belteshazzar, tell me the interpretation, because none of the wise men of my kingdom can make the interpretation known to me, but you can, because you have a spirit of the holy gods. Then Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar, was stunned for a moment, and his thoughts alarmed him. The king said, Belteshazzar, don't let the dream or its interpretation alarm you. Belteshazzar answered, my lord, may the dream apply to those who hate you and its interpretation to your enemies. The tree you saw, which grew large and strong, whose top reached to the sky and was visible to the whole earth, and whose leaves were beautiful and its fruit abundant, and on it was food for all. Under it the wild animals lived, and in its branches the birds of the sky lived. That tree is you, your majesty, for you have become great and strong. Your greatness has grown and even reaches the sky, and your dominion extends to the ends of the earth. The king saw a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, cut down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump with its roots in the ground and with a band of iron and bronze around it in the tender grass of the field. Let him be drenched with dew from the sky and share food with the wild animals for 7 periods of time. This is the interpretation, your majesty, and this is the decree of the Most High that has been issued against my lord, the king. You will be driven away from people to live with the wild animals. You will feed on grass like cattle and be drenched with dew from the sky for 7 periods of time until you acknowledge that the Most High is ruler over human kingdoms and he gives them to anyone he wants. As for the command to leave the tree stump with its roots, your kingdom will be restored to you as soon as you acknowledge that heaven rules. Therefore, may my advice seem good to you, my king. Separate yourself from your sins by doing what is right and from your injustices by showing mercy to the needy. Perhaps there will be an extension of your prosperity. All this happened to King Nebuchadnezzar at the end of 12 months as he was walking on the roof of the royal palace in Babylon. The king exclaimed, is this not Babylon the Great that I have built to be a royal residence by my vast power and for my majestic glory? While the words were still in the king's mouth, a voice came from heaven, King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is declared that the kingdom has departed from you. You will be driven away from people to live with the wild animals, and you will feed on grass like cattle for 7 periods of time until you acknowledge that the Most High is ruler over human kingdoms, and he gives them to anyone he wants at that moment. The message against Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from people. He ate grass like cattle, and his body was drenched with dew from the sky until his hair grew like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. But at the end of those days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, looked up to heaven, and my sanity returned to me. Then I praised the Most High and honored and glorified him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are counted as nothing, and he does what he wants with the army of heaven and the inhabitants of the earth. There is no one who can block his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" At that time, my sanity returned to me, and my majesty and splendor returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. My advisors and my nobles sought me out. I was reestablished over my kingdom, and even more greatness came to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise, exalt, and glorify the King of the heavens, because all his works are true and his ways are just. He is able to humble those who walk in pride. I just pause here to say, people wonder, was he truly converted? I don't know. But when he went through this judgment, when he went into it, he was a pagan idol worshiper. When he comes out of it, he's talking like a Puritan theologian. This is how a believer talks. We're going to see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven? I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised. And you know what? You ought to remember, when something like this happens to somebody in your family, you ought to remember it. We're going to find out in the next chapter. There was somebody who should have learned this lesson, but didn't. Okay. Now, Daniel 5, very famous story. Some years now have passed. Nebuchadnezzar's dead and gone. Belshazzar's the king. King Belshazzar held a great feast for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine in their presence. Under the influence of the wine, Belshazzar gave orders to bring in the gold and silver vessels that his predecessor Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, wives, and concubines could drink from them. So they brought him the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple, the house of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, wives, and concubines drank from them. They drank the wine and praised their gods made of gold and silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Stop here to say, these implements were taken out of the temple in Jerusalem in 605 B.C. We actually know this date from secular history. We're now at October 12, 539 B.C. So 605 all the way down to 539 B.C. Nebuchadnezzar's dead. One of his descendants, a fellow by the name of Belshazzar, is on the throne. Evidently, no one had ever thought to do what Belshazzar did here. Take these holy goblets and use them in pagan worship in this wild, wild party. So we read. Verse 5, at that moment, the fingers of a man's hand appeared, began writing on the plaster of the king's palace wall next to the lampstand. As the king watched the hand that was writing, his face turned pale and his thoughts so terrified him that he soiled himself and his knees knocked together. The king shouted to bring in the mediums, Chaldeans, and diviners. He said to these wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this inscription, gives me its interpretation, will be clothed in purple, have a gold chain around his neck, and have the third highest position in the kingdom." So all the king's wise men came in, but none could read the inscription or make the interpretation known to him. Then King Belshazzar became even more terrified. His face turned pale, and his nobles were bewildered. Because of the outcry of the king and his nobles, the queen came to the banquet hall. Probably the queen mother, by the way. "May the king live forever," she said. "Don't let your thoughts terrify you or your face be pale. There is a man in your kingdom who has a spirit of the holy gods in him. In the days of your predecessor, he was found to have insight, intelligence, and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods. Your predecessor, King Nebuchadnezzar, appointed him chief of the magicians, mediums, Chaldeans, and diviners. Your own predecessor, the king, did this because Daniel, the one the king named Belshazzar, was found to have an extraordinary spirit, knowledge and intelligence, and the ability to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve problems. Therefore, summon Daniel. He will give the interpretation." Then Daniel was brought before the king. The king said to him, "Are you Daniel, one of the Judean exiles that my predecessor, the king, brought from Judah? I've heard that you have a spirit of the gods in you, and that insight, intelligence, and extraordinary wisdom are found in you. Now, The wise men and mediums were brought before me to read this inscription and make its interpretation known to me, but they could not give its interpretation. However, I have heard about you that you can give interpretations and solve problems. Therefore, if you can read this inscription and give me its interpretation, you will be clothed in purple, have a gold chain around your neck, and have the third highest position in the kingdom. Then Daniel answered the king, "You may keep your gifts and your rewards to give your rewards to someone else. However, I will read the inscription for the king and make the interpretation known to him. Your Majesty, the Most High God, gave sovereignty, greatness, glory, and majesty to your predecessor Nebuchadnezzar. Because of the greatness he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages were terrified and fearful of him. He killed anyone he wanted and kept alive anyone he wanted. He exalted anyone he wanted and humbled anyone he wanted. But when his heart was exalted and his spirit became arrogant, he was deposed from his royal throne and his glory was taken from him. He was driven away from people. His mind was like an animal's. He lived with the wild donkeys. He was fed grass like cattle, and his body was drenched with dew from the sky until he acknowledged that the Most High God is ruler over human kingdoms and sets anyone he wants over them. But you, his successor, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew all this. Instead, you have exalted yourself against the Lord of the heavens. The vessels from his house were brought to you, and as you and your nobles, wives, and concubines drank wine from them, you praised the gods made of silver and gold, bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see or hear or understand. But you have not glorified the God who holds your life breath in his hand and who controls the whole course of your life. Therefore, he sent the hand, and this writing was inscribed. This is the writing that was inscribed. Mene, Mene, Tekel, and Parson. This is the interpretation of the message. Mene means God has numbered the days of your kingdom and brought it to an end. Tekel means you have been weighed on the balance and found deficient. Perez means that your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Then Belshazzar gave an order, and they clothed Daniel in purple, placed a gold chain around his neck, and issued a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, was killed, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom at the age of 62. I don't have time to get into further details, but check it out. Just Google October 12, 539 BC and see what it says. That's the day. That's the day from history when this happened. This is the day. That's really the night. That night, the Babylonian Empire ended and the Medo-Persian Empire began. Chapter 6. Darius decided to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom. This is Daniel 6. Stationed throughout the realm, and over them three administrators, including Daniel. These satraps would be accountable to them so that the king would not be defrauded. Daniel distinguished himself above the administrators and satraps because he had an extraordinary spirit, so the king planned to set him over the whole realm. The administrators and satraps therefore kept trying to find a charge against Daniel regarding the kingdom, but they could find no charge of corruption, for he was trustworthy and no negligence or corruption was found in him. These men said, "We will never find any charge against this Daniel unless we find something against him concerning the law of his God." So the administrators and satraps went together to the king and said to him, "May King Darius live forever. All the administrators of the kingdom, the prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an edict that for 30 days, anyone who petitions any god or man except you, the king, will be thrown into the lion's den. Therefore, your majesty, establish this edict and sign the document so that, as a law of the Medes and Persians, it is irrevocable and cannot be changed." So King Darius signed the written edict. When Daniel learned that the document had been signed, he went to his house, the windows in its upstairs room opened toward Jerusalem, and three times a day he got down on his knees, prayed, and gave thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel petitioning and imploring his God. So they approached the king and asked about his edict. "Didn't you sign an edict that for 30 days any person who petitions any god or man except you, the king, will be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "As a law of the Medes and Persians, the order stands and is irrevocable." Then they replied to the king, "Daniel, one of the Judean exiles, has ignored you, the king, and the edict you signed, for he prays three times a day." As soon as the king heard this, he was very displeased. He set his mind on rescuing Daniel and made every effort until sundown to deliver him. Then these men went together to the king and said to him, "You know, Your Majesty, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no edict or ordinance the king establishes can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you continually serve, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing in regard to Daniel could be changed. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, though diversions were brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he reached the den, he cried out in anguish to Daniel. "Daniel, servant of the living God," the king said, "has your God, whom you continually serve, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Then Daniel spoke with the king, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths. They haven't harmed me, for I was found innocent before him, and also before you, your majesty. I have not done harm." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to take Daniel out of the den. When Daniel was brought up from the den, he was found to be unharmed, for he trusted in his God. The king then gave the command, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and thrown into the lion's den, they, their children, and their wives. They had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to those of every people, nation, and language who live on the whole earth, "May your prosperity abound. I issue a decree that in all my royal dominion, people must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed, and his dominion has no end. He rescues and delivers. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth, for he has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Where did Daniel get the courage? Where did he get the courage way back? 605 BC, as a teenage kid, to refuse to eat at the king's table. I mean, what does the king eat? Anything he wants. You know, you say to a young man, "You want to eat the king's table?" Well, who wouldn't? But he didn't. He purposed in his heart he would not defile himself with the king's food. He made up his mind. And he never moved away from that. And God brought him through that crisis. And the crisis, the dream about the statue. And the crisis with the strange dream that King Nebuchadnezzar had in chapter 4. And the crisis with Belshazzar and the handwriting on the wall. And now this final crisis. He's an old man. I mean, when they threw him in the, he's like a teenager in chapter 1, but by chapter 6, he's 85, 86 years old. Getting some old man like that, throwing him down. I went to the doctor yesterday. I did, and they asked me what they always ask people my age. "Have you had a fall in the last 6 months?" I said, "Yes." They said, "Did you go to the hospital?" I said, "No." "I'm not going to worry about it then." But that's because, old people fall. You take this old guy, 85, 86, you might kill him just by throwing him in the lion's den. I mean, just the fall might kill him. You, boy, get the lions involved. But, he was okay. What was his secret? I'll tell you what I think it is. Daniel never forgot who he was. He may have looked like a Babylonian on the outside. Those younger years, they gave him that name, Belteshazzar, of a bell, one of the Babylonian gods. But Daniel never forgot who he was, where he came from. He always remembered he must have come from a godly home, because by the time he's 15 years old, his convictions were settled, and he never moved away from them. I'll tell you the secret. This is how you and I are going to survive. same way Daniel did. If you know who you are, you can live for Christ anywhere. Write that down, friends. That's really important. If you know who you are, you can live for Christ anywhere. Jerusalem, yes. Babylon, yes. Egypt, yes. Athens, yes. Rome, yes. And now today, London, Paris, Singapore, San Francisco, Kansas City, Moscow, Beijing, Seoul, Tokyo, Johannesburg. It doesn't matter. Montevideo. It doesn't matter. If you know who you are, you can live for Christ anywhere. We'll leave the matter right there. I gave you that song yesterday, Dare to Be a Daniel. What we're really saying is, remember who you are. Remember who you are. You're a Christian. You're a child of God. You're a child of the King. If you know who you are, you can live for Christ anywhere. So remember who you are as you go about your day. If you do that, you will have a great, amazing day. Come back tomorrow. There's more to come in the great book of Daniel. God bless. See you then.